Ama, do you remember Olga's friend Jasmine?
Esa huerca? How can I forget? She was always at our house, never wanted to go home. She drove me crazy.
Why? What about her?
I was just remembering her, that's all. Do you remember her last name?
Why? Did you see her or something?
I get a little panicky, as if somehow she can see inside my brain and know that I went to that party.
No, of course not! Didn't she move to Texas? Where would I see her?
I probably sound too defensive. I let the silence hang for a while. With a repulsed look on her face, Ama dusts all of the statues.
Did Olga have a boyfriend?
I finally say.
The only boyfriend she had was Pedro. Such a nice young man.
If by nice she means ugly and dull, then sure. So she never had a boyfriend after that?
Of course not. What kind of question is that? Did you ever see her running around with boys?
Ama looks annoyed, but I can't stop asking questions.
Okay, okay, sorry. It's just, how was it that she was 22 and didn't have a boyfriend for so many years? That seems weird.
What's so strange about a young lady who doesn't sleep around, who enjoys spending time at home with her family? Girls here have no morals. You're the weird one, do you know that?
Mama's face is starting to get splotchy, and her big eyes look inflamed. So I shut up and keep cleaning. Dr. Scheinberg arrives right as we're finishing. When he hands us the money, he says, "Gracias," and bows with his hands pressed together, and oh my God, he's not even joking. I don't like the way he stares at Ama when he says goodbye. There's something about him that makes me feel as if I'm smeared in an awful warm goo. No wonder he's not married. It's dark and the ground is covered with snow. Everything looks beautiful and still, as if it were a photograph and not real life. Usually winter makes me glum, but every once in a while moments like this are peaceful and pleasant. The icicles, the glittering snow, the silence. By the time we get on the bus, my back aches, my hands are cracked, and my eyes burn from all the cleaning products. I smell like bleach and sweat. I've never been this tired in my whole life. Who knew rich people could be so disgusting? Now I understand why everyone calls work la chinga, and why Ama is always in a bad mood. I wonder what else she sees in people's houses, and if other men look at her the way Dr. Scheinberg does.
Chapter 9.
I decide to go to the school dance because the after party is at Alex Tafoya's house. His parents are in Mexico for a few weeks, and Lorena says his sister Jessica, who went to school with Olga, will be there. It might be completely useless, I'm not sure how well they knew each other, but I don't know what else to do. Ama lets me go to the dance, which I think might qualify as a miracle, though she tells me I better not act volada, which means flirtatious. Every time she says stuff like this, I feel ashamed, and I don't know why, because I haven't done anything. I have to buy a new dress, and Ama says she'll take me to the mall. I hate shopping, but now I have no choice because I have absolutely nothing to wear. The only three dresses I have are literally falling apart. One has a giant hole in the armpit. Ama says it makes me look like an orphan, that I should throw it away, but I like the way it fits. She also says I can't wear jeans or any of my band t-shirts she hates so much. No Chuck Taylors either. I have to look like a proper woman. Thanks to my upcoming quinceañera, my budget is only $45. Practically nothing. The Sunday before the dance, Ama and I drive to the outlet mall in the suburbs. After driving west in snow flurries for about an hour, we finally arrive. I thought our neighborhood was bad, but if I had to live in the suburbs, I think I'd just lie down and die. I don't care that the houses are big and expensive. Everything is exactly the same, and the only restaurants I see are Chili's and Olive Garden. The first store we go to is full of white women who look at us funny when we enter, which is already a bad sign. I glance at the price tag on a ridiculous pink sweater and see that it's on sale for $99. If that's what they think a sale is, then we probably can't even afford their socks. No thanks. Let's go, I say. We walk around for half an hour, looking for a store that's affordable, and I just want to give up and bury my face in a Cinnabon, even though they always make me sick. I sit down on a bench and tell Ama that I'm not going to find anything, that she can go on without me.
Come on, Ama says, yanking me by the arm. We're going to find you something. Don't be so dramatic. If not, we'll go somewhere else.
I'd rather buy the worst dress here than go to another mall. Let's get this over with, I say, getting up with a new sense of determination. After trying on about 20 dresses at 5 different stores, I finally find one I want. It has a black and red checked pattern and falls right above my knee, which is the perfect length for me because anything longer makes me look stumpy. The dress is what I imagine a career woman wearing when she goes out for drinks after work. I bet no one at school will have a dress like this. I'm lucky, too, because it's a size 10 and it's on clearance. At 75% off, it costs $39.99. When I come out of the dressing room, Ama shakes her head.
What?
It's too tight.
No, it's not. It fits perfectly.
It shows your chest too much, Ama says, scrunching her face as if she's just smelled something gross.
Ama hates it when women wear revealing clothing. But this dress is not sexy at all. It's not even low cut. Doesn't show any cleavage whatsoever. Every time my parents turn on the TV, there are women dressed like strippers, even the news anchors. Yet I'm supposed to be embarrassed of my boobs? I don't get it. Even the time she found out I had shaved my legs, she was hysterical. Am I expected to cover myself with cloaks and let my body be covered in dark fur?
I think it looks good on me, I tell Ama. I like it, and it's the perfect price.
Why do you always have to wear black? Why don't you try a different color, something nice like yellow or green?
A woman comes into the dressing room with an armful of black pants. She gives me an awkward smile, as if she somehow knows this is torture for me.
Yellow or green? Are you serious? Ama, that's disgusting.
It's not proper, Julia. Why can't you understand that? I'm not going to buy it.
So you will only buy me a dress that you like, even if I hate it?
I should have known shopping with Ama would be a mistake.
Yes, that's right.
I can't believe this. Why do you always do this? Why can't I wear what I want? It's not like I'm wearing a pair of Daisy Dukes and a see-through tube top.
Remember, you're not the boss here.
Why are you always making everything so difficult? Why aren't you ever happy? I try to do something nice. And this is how you act? Dios mío. Who would have guessed I would have such an ungrateful daughter?
Ama is highly skilled in the art of guilt trips. She could win a gold medal.
Jesus Christ! Don't buy me anything then.
I go back into the dressing room, my eyes already brimming. I try to wipe away the tears, but they keep coming and coming. I feel a sob traveling up my body and stop it before it gets past my throat. I'm so frustrated, I don't know what to do with myself. Sometimes when I feel like this, I want to break things. I want to hear things shatter. My heart beats so fast and hard that I can hardly breathe. And I wonder if anything will ever get better. Is this really the way my life is going to be? I look at myself in the mirror one last time. I can't help if my boobs are big. What am I supposed to do? Strap them down with bandages? I'm tired of people telling me how I should act and how I should look. Only a year and a half left until I leave home. Then no one will be allowed to tell me what to wear or what to do. Ever. I have to borrow one of Lorena's dresses, which isn't easy because her closet is full of glittery clothes with wacky patterns, and most of them are way too small. Lorena and I are the same height, but she's skinny enough to buy clothes from the kids' section sometimes. The one I finally pick is black and stretchy. It barely fits, but it will have to work. It also has a slit up the side, which I think looks elegant. I have to borrow a pair of black flats, too, because heels are for suckers, I've decided. Lorena and I go to the dance with a group of girls. No dates allowed. She tells Carlos he can't come, and Wanga has been MIA for a week, now that he ran off with some old dude from Indiana. I wonder if he'll get kicked out of school. I try to act disappointed when Lorena tells me he isn't going to join us, but she sees right through me. We meet Fatima, Maggie, and Sandra from our gym class by the entrance. They all have horrifying grammar, but they're really friendly. Besides, I shouldn't judge people for saying yous instead of you, or mines instead of mine. A lot of people at school speak like that, so I should get over it already. Lorena tells me I'm too uptight, which is why I hardly have any friends. The flashing lights and smoke machine make it hard to see. When my eyes finally adjust, I notice people dancing so close they're practically dry humping. Someone's going to come out if you're pregnant. Lorena and the girls go nuts over a song I don't recognize and run to the dance floor. I decide to stay behind, and after a few minutes, I start worrying about where I should look and where to put my hands. What if I stare at someone too long? What if I look like Frankenstein with my arms hanging stiffly at my sides? What if people think I'm a loser for standing by myself? As all of these stupid thoughts run through my head, Chris comes toward me, wearing sunglasses and a Scarface t-shirt, completely oblivious to how idiotic he looks. I've known him since grade school, and he's always been an unbearable little numbskull.
You look nice, for once,
he says, eyeing at my dress, but mostly my boobs. Is that supposed to be a compliment?
Yeah.
You need to learn how to talk to women. I turn away from Chris, but he keeps talking.
You, a woman? Ha!
He gets closer and lifts his sunglasses, as if trying to get a better look. As if I'm some chunk of beef on clearance he's evaluating.
Why you gotta dress stupid all the time?
Are you serious? You're such an asshole, Chris. Don't ever, ever talk to me again. Don't even look in my direction, I swear to God.
You're conceited. That's your problem. You think you're better than everybody. You think you're all smart, talking like a white girl and shit.
Who do you think you are, talking to me like that? I'm so angry my hands are shaking. I want to slap his sunglasses off his face, but it's not worth it. He'll probably end up living in his mom's basement until he's 40. That should be punishment enough. I find the girls dancing like it's their last day on Earth, their hands flying in the air and their hips swinging back and forth. They form a circle and shake their butts against me, which makes me laugh. When they finally turn on the lights, Lorena tells me that we can walk to the after party because it's only two blocks away. Are you absolutely sure his sister is going to be there?
Because you know I'm going to get in trouble, right? I didn't tell my mom because she'd never let me go. That's what Alex said. She's supposed to be here. I text Ama that I won't be home until later. Not even 3 seconds later, I feel the phone buzzing. But I don't pick up because I already know what she's going to say. People think Alex is so cool because he's tall and good at basketball, and all the girls think he's hot, but I would give him a C+ at most. He has nice teeth, but I don't really see what the big deal is. Alex's house is already bursting with people, which makes me think I've made a mistake. I don't do well in crowds. Once, when I was little, I freaked the hell out during a parade, and my parents had to carry me home kicking and screaming. And sometimes I have trouble breathing in crammed elevators. The windows are steamy from so much body heat, and everyone is clogging the doors and hallways, making it almost impossible to get through. For a second, I think I might have a panic attack, but I calm myself down. I breathe slowly and tell myself it's going to be okay. After getting past the crowd of people in the living room, we finally make our way to the drinks in the kitchen. The table is covered with all sorts of bottles, and there's a keg next to the sink. Alex and the rest of the basketball team are smoking weed near the window. He asks us if we want to smoke or if he could make us a drink, which is nice of him because he probably has no idea who I am. The girls all choose Malibu rum, but I go for the Hennessy and Coke. I'm not sure if you're supposed to mix the two, but the drink tastes okay. I finish it in 3 gulps. When I go for another cup, though, Lorena grabs my wrist and tells me to slow it down. I cut to the chase. Where's Alex's sister?
I don't know. I haven't seen her yet.
Try to have fun, at least. She'll be here. Lorena walks away and gets lost in the crowd before I can follow her. I spend most of the night searching for Jessica. I don't really remember what she looks like. I'm guessing she resembles Alex in some way. Lorena says her hair is dyed dark red, but I don't see any girls with red hair. After about 3 more drinks, I start feeling a little more relaxed. Even though sometimes I have a big mouth, I find it hard to strike up conversations with people I don't know. I guess that's one thing Olga and I had in common. When I wait in line for the bathroom, I ask the cute guy in front of me who the funny-looking man on his shirt is, and he just mumbles something and walks away. Ama always says that women should never approach men, that we should be the ones pursued and courted. And maybe she's right, because this is totally embarrassing. After I pee, I find Maggie in the living room by herself and ask her if she knows where Lorena is. She shrugs and says she hasn't seen her in a while. Maggie is sweet and cute, but there's not much going on in her head. No matter what you're talking about, even if you're not asking her a question, she has a confused look on her face. And there's a sort of blankness in her eyes I can't explain. It's not like Lorena, who only pretends to be dumb. Maggie's stupidity is totally sincere. Are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah, it's okay, I guess, Maggie says, fixing her ponytail. No cute guys, though.
No, none. That dude over there looks like a scrotum, I say, pointing to a bald guy with big jowls slumped on the sofa. Maggie laughs.
You're crazy.
I nod. Unfortunately. As I look around the party trying to spot Lorena, I see a couple making out in a bedroom through a cracked door. Not just kissing, though. I mean, really going at it.
Whoa. Check that out,
I whisper to Maggie and tilt my head in their direction. The girl is sitting on the guy's lap with her legs wrapped around him. Maybe it's because she's totally drunk, but I don't notice any shred of shame or embarrassment, which I admire in a strange way. Their kisses are wet and sloppy, and you can see their tongues going in and out of each other's mouths. The girl rubs herself on the guy as he starts kissing her neck and chest.
The girls next to us are now scandalized. Call her a slut, skank, whore, and so many other synonyms in both English and Spanish that it seems like they've consulted a bilingual thesaurus. A group of guys gather and try to snap pictures with their phones. The couple either doesn't notice or doesn't care.
"That's disgusting," Maggie says. "She is so nasty."
"Yeah, so gross," I say. "But I'm wondering if anyone will ever touch me like that." After I use the bathroom for the billionth time, I finally find Lorena in the back porch, surrounded by a circle of cretins who are way too old to be at a high school party. They probably went to school with my sister, too. It doesn't surprise me because Lorena loves attention from men, no matter how old or ugly. What kind of losers come to a party like this once they've already graduated? Or dropped out? "Where is Jessica? I've been looking for her all night. That's the only reason I came."
"I don't know. Alex said she'd be here."
Lorena shrugs.
"Just chill, okay?"
"No, I want to go home. Now."
"Yeah, baby, relax,"
says a guy wearing a backward baseball cap. "Mind your business. And my name is not Baby," I tell him and turn to Lorena. "Look, if I get in trouble, it's going to be your fault."
"Give me 5 more minutes. Come on, don't be like that."
Lorena is definitely drunk. I can tell by the way her mouth moves, as if it's suddenly too heavy for her face. The house is beginning to clear out a little, so I give up and find a spot on the couch. Next thing I know, Lorena is shaking me and telling me to wake up, that we have to leave because someone called the cops. When I ask her what time it is, she says it's 3 a.m., which means I'm screwed. I've done the calculations and have figured out that from the ages of 13 to 15, I've spent about 45% of my life grounded. Seriously, what kind of life is that? I know I mess up sometimes. I know I can be a sarcastic jerk. I know I'm not the daughter my parents wanted, but Ama treats me like I'm a degenerate. Sometimes when I'm punished like this, Ama doesn't even let me go to the library, which I think is the cruelest kind of torture. What am I supposed to do if I have to sit in my room for hours and hours? "I can't get pregnant at the library," I tell her, but it doesn't matter. Ama says I can clean, do my homework, and if she's feeling generous, she says she'll let me watch telenovelas with them. But I'd rather poke my eyes out like Oedipus than sit through an episode of that garbage. The acting on those shows is forced and stiff, and the characters are always slapping each other dramatically. The plot lines are always the same, too. A poor woman overcomes adversity and marries a rich asshole, and they live happily ever after. All the upper-class people are white, and the servants are dark like me. I've always had trouble being happy, but now it feels impossible. Everyone in my family tells me what a difficult baby I was compared to Olga. When I was little, anything would set me off. A dirty look, a dropped cookie, a canceled outing. I remember I once sobbed because I saw a 3-legged dog. I don't know why I've always been like this, why the smallest things make me ache inside. There's a poem I read once titled, "The World is Too Much with Us," and I guess that is the best way to describe the feeling. The world is too much with me. It's not like my parents are happy either. All they do is work. They never go out anywhere, and when they're home, they hardly even talk to each other. I don't understand why everyone just complains about who I am. What am I supposed to do? Say I'm sorry? I'm sorry I can't be normal? I'm sorry I'm such a bad daughter? I'm sorry I hate the life that I have to live? There are times I feel completely alone, like no one in the world can possibly understand me.
Sometimes Amma stares at me like I'm some sort of mutant that slithered out of her body. Lorena listens, which I appreciate, but she doesn't really get it. She's practically a science genius, but she doesn't care about literature or art. I don't think anyone likes what I like. Sometimes I feel so lonely and hopeless that I don't know what to do. Usually I just bottle up all of my feelings and wait until my parents go to sleep so I can cry, which I know is totally pathetic. If I can't wait, I do it in the shower. It builds and builds all day, tightening my throat and chest, and sometimes I feel it in my face. When I finally let it out, it cascades out of me. On top of everything, I haven't been able to sleep. Even if I'm completely exhausted, even if my body is screaming and begging that it needs to rest, some nights I just stare at my ceiling for hours and hours. I look at the clock, and it's almost time for me to get ready for school. I hear the world go to sleep and wake up. The slowing of traffic, birds chirping, cars starting, my parents making coffee. I've tried everything, too. Counting sheep, counting kittens, drinking hot milk, listening to relaxing music, but nothing helps. The times I do sleep, I have nightmares about people trying to murder me in an upside-down house, or something equally weird. At least I haven't had any more dreams about Olga. In the mornings, I'm a shred of a person. There are days I feel like I'm being held together by string. Other times I feel entirely unstitched or unhinged. I can barely keep my head up, let alone get good grades so I can get the hell out of here and go to college. I have only a year and a half left, but it feels eternal. It feels infernal. Today, my honors English class, the only class I enjoy, feels like a never-ending burden. Mr. Ingman is going over Huckleberry Finn, which I've already read 3 times, but I can't pay attention. I look out the window at 2 squirrels chasing each other in a tree, and think about our upcoming field trip to Warren Dunes. Sometimes nature makes me feel better, more human, like I'm connected to everything and everyone. Other times I want to lie under a tree and dissolve into the earth forever. Mr. Ingman asks the class about the symbolism of the Mississippi River, and though I know it inside and out, and no one else wants to answer, I don't even bother raising my hand, because I'm afraid that if I open my mouth, I'll start crying like a loser and won't be able to stop. After class, Mr. Ingman calls me over to his desk.
Is everything okay, Julia?
I nod.
Are you sure?
He crosses his arms. Ever since I told him my sister died, he looks as if he's trying to stare into my soul or something. I'm fine, I mumble. Please don't cry. Please don't cry. Please don't cry.
You don't seem fine. You look really upset. I know you love Huck Finn because we've talked about it many times, he says.
Sometimes I stay after school to talk to Mr. Ingman about books and college. He even lets me borrow some from his personal collection and gives me a list of schools he thinks I should apply to, which is why he's my favorite teacher.
You haven't said anything sarcastic in a few weeks now, which is what's worried me the most, to be perfectly honest.
Mr. Ingman's smile is nice. I bet he was hot 20 years ago. I just wish he wouldn't wear so many dad sweaters. I guess you're right. I try to laugh politely, but the laugh doesn't come out. It's just that I'm on my period, and it feels like someone is stabbing me in the uterus. I grimace and make a stabbing motion with my hand. A few years ago, I learned you can get away with nearly anything if you mention menstruation to your male teachers. Mr. Ingman looks uncomfortable, but it's clear he's not going to let me go.
Is something happening at home? How's your family doing since You know, your sister and everything.
We're okay, I guess. It comes in waves for me. Lots of waves. Big, big waves. And I guess I have this feeling, you know? That I'm missing something. That there's something I should know, but I can't figure it out. My voice cracks.
Like what?
I'm not about to tell Mr. Ingman about the underwear and hotel key, so I just shrug and say, I don't really know. Something's just off.
I'm sorry. It must be so hard.
He crosses his arms and looks down. It's impossible. And sometimes I think it's my fault. Like, what if I would have done something differently that day? Would she still be alive?
You can't think of it that way.
Why not?
Because it's not your fault. You didn't want your sister to die. Things like this just happen in life. Shit's fucked up sometimes.
Mr. Ingman looks embarrassed for swearing, but doesn't apologize.
My mother died when I was 10. Heart attack. Just collapsed at work one day. I had been awful to her that morning. I threw a tantrum about my lunch and told her I hated her, and then she died. Just like that.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I'm stunned. I don't know why, but I always assumed that Mr. Ingman had an easy life. I imagined him growing up with a treehouse or some shit. Does it go away? That feeling?
It gets easier. But I still think about her every day.
Mr. Ingman sighs and looks out the window. I get a whiff of his aftershave. Something about that smell, the smell of man, is comforting. When I get home, Apa is on the couch, soaking his feet in his tub. Because he works all day packaging candy, he always has problems with his body. Cuts, back pains, glue burns, and swollen legs, just to name a few. Some days he works 12 hours and comes back home looking like someone beat him with a bat. A few times a week they force him to work the night shift too. Apa doesn't say much, but he always tells me,
"Don't work like a donkey like me. Be a secretary and work in a nice office with air conditioning."
I never tell him I'd rather clean toilets than be some man's assistant. Fetching coffee and being bossed around by a jerk in a suit? No thanks. Once, I told Apa that I wanted to be a writer. But all he said was that I had to make enough money so I didn't have to live in an apartment full of roaches. I never brought it up again. I plop down on the couch before I go to my room and start my homework. Apa is watching Primer Impacto, that horrible tabloid news show that covers the most bizarre stories. Siamese twins, exorcisms, child abuse, hauntings, disfigured people. I don't know why people watch that stuff. When the segment on the cockroach-eating baby begins, I go into the kitchen for a glass of water. Ama is hunched over the sink, scrubbing pans. I wonder what it's like to clean houses all day and then come home and keep cleaning. I hate seeing her this way, because it makes me feel so guilty. Guilty for existing. Guilty that she has to work like that for us.
"How was school?"
Ama asks, and kisses me on the cheek. Even when I'm punished and I'm convinced she doesn't love me anymore, she still kisses me on the cheek. "It was okay."
"You look sick. Have you been eating junk at school?"
"No."
"Are you lying to me?"
Ama always asks so many questions. I feel perpetually interrogated. "I swear to God, I just ate a sandwich."
"I don't like the color on your face."
Ama gets closer. She smells like dish soap.
What color?
You look yellow.
I'm brown. Definitely not yellow, I say, staring at my arm.
Well, you don't look right. I might have to take you to the doctor. You can't have a quinceañera looking like that, you know? You have to be pretty for your family. What will your sister think when she looks down on you from heaven?
The thought of Olga sitting in a cloud in the sky watching me is so stupid it almost makes me laugh. Does Amma actually believe she can see us?
Is there something you're not telling me?
She says, feeling my forehead.
I said no! Jesus Christ, leave me alone!
I snap, which surprises both of us.
You're going to be sorry when I'm not around. You'll see.
Amma turns back to the sink. She is always going on and on about how she'll be dead one day. Do all mothers do that? It used to make me feel bad, but now it just gets on my nerves. Suddenly, I feel something gurgle inside me. A warm, stretching pain. But it's not my stomach. When I go to the bathroom, I see a smear of reddish-brown on my underwear. My period is a week early. But that's what I get for lying. Chapter 10. Winter is finally over. Christmas and New Year's came and went like a slow and anguishing blur. We spent the holidays at Tio Bigotes' house with the rest of the family. Though my aunts and uncles tried to make it festive with loud music and a giant feast of tamales and roasted goat, Olga's absence floated silently around us. No one mentioned her, probably so Amma wouldn't cry, which she did anyway when we got home. But we could all feel it. Every spring, the teachers organize an outdoor field trip for each class. They've been doing it ever since Olga was in high school, maybe even before. I bet they feel sorry for us because we live in the city and never get to go anywhere. The only animals we see are pigeons and rats, which are essentially the same thing. Nancy from chemistry class told me she had never been outside of Chicago until 2 years ago, when she went to Wisconsin. I don't even know how that's possible. I guess these trips are a way of giving us poor kids a taste of nature. Last year, they took us to Starved Rock State Park, which was beautiful. I spent the entire time alone writing in my notebook next to a waterfall. Some people made out in a cave all day. Another group just sat around looking at their phones. What a waste. I don't understand how people can ignore beauty like that. I saw rabbits, beavers, toads, and all sorts of colorful birds. I saw a freaking eagle, which I wasn't even sure actually existed. I started to wish that I could live alone in a cabin by myself, like Henry David Thoreau. But I'd probably start to get restless after a few days. This year, after a never-ending bus ride, we finally arrive at the dunes. The sun is shining, and though it's chilly, it's beginning to look and feel like spring. The trees are growing leaves again, and some flowers are beginning to sprout. Not bad for April. Ms. Lopez and Mr. Ingman tell us we have to meet near the bus at 2 p.m.
Under no circumstances will you leave the park. Do you understand?
Ms. Lopez says, with her hands on her hips, trying to look tough but failing because she's probably not even 5 feet tall. As soon as we all mumble yes, Ms. Lopez goes back to flirting with Mr. Ingman. I heard her laughing at all of his stupid jokes throughout the entire bus ride. I know both of them are divorced, and the way she looks at him makes me wonder if they're bony. Lorena, Wanga, and I wander around the forest until it's time for lunch. I still haven't been able to shake him. He and Lorena are inseparable. I thought his charm would have worn off by now, but no. The whole time he complains that he doesn't have any cell phone reception. I try to block him out and focus on the buds on the trees, the smell of leaves, and the sounds of birds.
but he's so annoying that it's almost impossible. I have to put up with him because I'm going to ask him to help me get in touch with Jasmine through his friend Maribel. I keep wondering who Olga told Jasmine about when she ran into her at the mall a few years ago. I mean, it's hard to believe that she could have been talking about Pedro. How could anyone be excited about him?
Ugh, I hate nature, Juanga says.
How can you hate nature? I grow more exasperated by him by the minute. I just do. It's boring. So what do you like to do for fun? What is your idea of beauty?
Shopping, partying, and fucking.
He laughs.
That's all you like?
Do you have any sort of inner life? Do you even know what that is?
Lorena glares at me.
God, Julia, shut up already, okay?
I'm sorry, but I don't understand how a person can say they hate nature. It's like saying you hate happiness, or laughter, or fun. I don't get how someone could be so freaking vapid.
I don't know what that word means, but just stop.
Juanga looks like he wants to say something, but instead he walks a few feet away from us and looks down toward the lake.
Okay, okay. I'm done.
I lift my hand to show that I give up. We climb to the top of the highest dune when it's time for lunch. The view is incredible. The waves are splashing and the white dunes against the blue sky are unreal. I had no idea something so beautiful was close to Chicago. Lorena sets the blanket down for us. Ama had to be all Mexican about it and pack me cold cheese and bean burritos. God forbid I eat a regular sandwich. Before we even start eating, Juanga, who is clearly obsessed with all things penile, starts talking about different shapes he's seen in his life. The craziest one, he says, was long and pointy, which seems like something out of a horror movie.
That sounds terrifying, I say. I would have run out of the room screaming, worried for my life.
It was ugly, Juanga says, closing his eyes, then taking a small bite of his smelly tuna sandwich. But it felt like heaven. I shudder.
This one over here used to think that penises had hair on them. Not just the balls, the actual penis.
Lorena points at me and laughs.
What?
Juanga nearly chokes on his food.
How is that possible?
I had never seen one, so I assumed, I say, looking down at my cold burrito. I mean, women have hair down there, so it made sense to me. I don't tell him I still haven't seen one in real life.
Yeah, I had to be the one to break it down for her,
Lorena says, and Juanga laughs so hard he almost spits out his Coke.
She's a virgin, you know.
Juanga's stunned. I had no idea that a 15-year-old virgin would be such an oddity. It's as if Lorena just told him I had a sixth toe or something. She lost her virginity when she was 14 and thinks she's some sort of sexpert now.
So what?
I glower at her. I can't believe she's embarrassing me in front of this idiot. I feel the burritos hardening into cement in my stomach.
I'm just saying that for all the shit you talked about your sister being such a saint, you're really not that much different. You're always so scared of your mother.
Are you serious? Are you really talking about my sister right now?
Well, it's true, isn't it?
Lorena is defensive all of a sudden. We've argued about stupid stuff a million times over the years, but this feels different. We've never done it in front of other people like this.
And who is there for me to have sex with? Please, tell me. Am I supposed to just bang any loser I see?
That's not what I'm saying. Lorena looks frustrated.
Then what are you trying to say?
sometimes you're kinda stuck up. I mean, I guess I shouldn't blame you. That's how your mom is.
Lorena knows this is a low blow and looks nervous right after she says it. Being compared to my mother makes me want to punch Lorena right in the mouth, but I do my best to control myself.
So I'm stuck up because I don't want to have sex with anyone? Am I hearing that correctly? No, it's not even about that. That's not what I'm saying. Sometimes it's like you think you're too good for everything. You're too hard on people.
Lorena doesn't make eye contact.
That's because I am too good for everything. You think this is what I want? This sucks. This sucks so hard, I can't take it sometimes.
I swing my arms, gesturing toward I don't know what. I'm so angry my ears feel as if they're on fire.
Just because you have sex with everything with a penis attached to it doesn't mean you're better than me.
Lorena looks hurt. Wanga pretends to be distracted by his phone, but I'm sure he's enjoying every second of it.
Forget it. Sometimes I just can't talk to you, Lorena says.
I throw the rest of my sad burrito into my backpack and run down the dune, nearly slipping on my way down. I'm sure Wanga would love to see me topple over and break my neck in front of everybody. When I get to the bottom, I kick the sand out of sheer frustration, and thanks to a gust of wind, some of it flies right into my eyes. I'm so pissed at Lorena, and I've had it up to my armpits with Wanga. Now I can't even ask him for Maribel's number. I don't even want to look at either one of them. I walk farther away from everyone and decide to make sand angels to see if that will calm me down. I close my eyes. I've always loved the feeling of sand against my skin. We rarely went to the lake when I was a kid, even though it was close. They were some of the only times I've ever seen Apa happy. He built sandcastles with us, and swam until it got dark. He said it reminded him of swimming in Los Ojos when he was young. When I open my eyes, I see Pascual standing over me. I nearly jump at the sight of his brown, pocked face.
What the hell, man? What are you doing?
Watching you. Duh.
Yeah, I see that, you weirdo, I say, getting up and dusting the sand off my clothes.
Your sister is dead.
No shit. How do you know?
Everyone knows. Do you miss her?
Pascual looks like a nerd, but he's not even smart, which is always disappointing. It surprises me every single time he opens his mouth in class. His clothes are so dorky, they're borderline offensive. He smells like basement and wears video game t-shirts, which he sometimes pairs with socks and sandals. Even his name is uncool. Pascual is the name of an old Mexican man who sits on a dusty porch muttering about his lost chickens. Of course I miss her. She was my sister. I don't know why I bother replying. I should probably just tell him to eat a bag of wieners.
Must be really hard.
I nod.
Was she pretty like you?
Ew, don't even. Jeez. I wrap my jacket around me. A seagull squawks above us. I hate those things. They always look like they're up to no good.
You don't even know you're pretty. That's sad.
Shut up. Leave me alone. I walk toward the lake.
You shouldn't hate yourself so much. Everyone is messed up, even when it doesn't seem like it.
The wind is starting to provoke the water, and a big, beefy cloud drifts toward us. I can see the faint and hazy Chicago skyline across the lake. It'll probably rain soon, which will make this day even worse. Pascual walks toward me, looking up at the sky with his mouth wide open, as if he's never seen it before. You don't know what you're talking about, I say.
I do. And you know I do.
Pascual puts his hands in his pockets and walks away. I sit down and pull out The Stranger by Albert Camus. I try to read, but I'm distracted because I'm still seething about my fight with Lorena. I just stare at the water and count the waves. When I reach 176, I hear someone yell behind me. It's Mr. Ingman.
Hey,
he says, and sits down next to me.
What are you reading now?
I hold it up for him to see.
So, a light beach read.
Mr. Ingman chuckles. I nod. I guess so.
What do you think of it?
It's like nothing means anything. Nothing has a real purpose. I guess that's how I feel a lot of the time. Sometimes I really don't see the point in anything.
Existential despair, huh?
Yes, exactly. I smile.
I really want to know that you're okay. You keep telling me you're fine, but I'm worried about you.
Mr. Ingman scoops sand with his hands and tries to form a pyramid. I don't know what okay means anymore. I don't know what normal is. What I don't tell him is that I can hardly get out of bed most mornings, that simply getting through the day feels like a monumental task.
I think you should talk to someone. You can always talk to me, but I think you need a professional. I can try to find you a free program.
That's very nice of you, but no thanks. I'm fine. Seriously. I'm a terrible liar, and I hope he doesn't notice.
Okay. I'm going to trust you here. Please don't let me down.
I won't. I force a smile. I promise. Chapter 11. We're barely halfway through the second semester of junior year, and all I can think about is getting the hell out of here and going to college. I feel as smothered and restless as ever. It's like I'm a wound-up toy with nowhere to move. I keep looking for the key to Olga's room every time I'm alone in the apartment, which is rare these days. Either Ama or Apa is always home. It's as if they don't trust me to be by myself. Whenever they run out for a quick errand, though, I hunt for the key. I've even risked stumbling upon sex stuff in their room by searching all of their drawers. I found a key in a jewelry box once, but it didn't fit. I've also thought about removing the lock with tools, but I'm afraid they'll catch me in the act. Meanwhile, I don't know what else to do to find out more about my sister. Angie isn't going to tell me anything, that's for sure. I think she might hate me, and I'm not even sure why. Olga didn't have many other friends, except some from high school I haven't seen in a long time. I also keep worrying that if Ama goes into her room and goes through her boxes, she's going to find her underwear and keel over. I didn't have a chance to take them out the day she caught me in there. All I can come up with so far is, 1, go to Olga's work. 2, get her transcripts from community college. Or 3, swallow my pride and ask Wanga to get me Jasmine's phone number from Maribel. The more I think about it, the stranger it seems that Olga went to this school for years and never seemed close to getting a degree. What was she even studying? The few times I asked her, she said business blah blah. And since that is something I know absolutely nothing about and have no interest in, I never probed any further. I guess that's typical of me. After school, I take the train to the college on the south side of the city. The building is so dreary and sterile that it almost looks like a prison. The outside is made of concrete, and the windows are only small tinted slits. Ama is crazy if she thinks I'm going to go to a school like this. There are students all over the hallways,
yelling and playing loud music on their phones. How can anyone learn anything in this place? This is not the kind of future I imagine for myself. Before I approach the records and registration desk, I practice my script in my head. I know that they might not want to release her records, just like at the hotel, but maybe if they feel sorry for me, they'll give in. I have to emphasize how Olga is dead and how distraught I am. Maybe I should make myself cry. Hello, my name is Julia Reyes, and my sister came to school here, I tell the middle-aged woman at the desk. I was hoping you could give me her transcripts. She's dead. Who was her emergency contact? She sounds as if my request were causing her bodily harm. Her expression is so sour, I bet her mother might not even love her. I don't know. My mom, I guess. What was her name? What years did she attend? And how long ago did she die? She types something into the computer. Olga Reyes. She attended school here from 2009 to 2013. She died in September. The woman knits her bushy eyebrows. What years did you say? From 2009 to 2013, I repeat. She looks at the screen again and purses her lips. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Why? Is it showing something different? I can't give you that information. Why not? How are you going to say that and then not tell me why? My ears grow hot. We are not allowed to release any records until 1 year after the student's death. At that time, the college will use its own discretion in deciding whether and under what conditions a student's information will be released to survivors or third parties. The woman sounds like a machine regurgitating information. I just told her my sister is dead, and she acts like a goddamn robot. You can't make any exceptions? I mean, she's dead. Please. You won't be violating her privacy. She's not going to come back from the grave and file a complaint. I really, really need this information. I don't think you understand how important it is. I'm very upset about my sister's death and would really appreciate your help. Please, just give me more information. I try to be as patient and polite as possible, even though I hate this woman. That's the school policy. No exceptions. You can come back in September and see if the office will release the information then. Until that time, there is nothing I can do. Now please move along. There are people waiting behind you. The woman purses her thin lips and motions with her hand for me to get going. I feel the anger rippling throughout my entire body. I know that I have an awful temper that is often impossible to control, but this woman is something special. Relax, I tell myself. Get a hold of yourself, Julia. I wish Lorena were here. She would probably know what to do. Do you have a soul? I mean, are you such a miserable sack of crap that you lack any kind of compassion? I guess I'd be upset too if I had a face like yours. Young lady, if you don't leave right now, I'm going to call security. I'm not joking. Her face is bright red now. Oh, go to hell, I say, and turn around. The woman behind me gasps as if it were the most scandalous thing she's ever heard in her whole entire life. Chapter 12. The quinceañera hangs over me like the blade of a guillotine. Okay, maybe that's a little dramatic, but I'm dreading it. Ama is making me take waltz classes with all my chambelanes, and I keep getting all the steps wrong. At first, I refused to do it, but then she said she wouldn't let me out of the house unless I did. What kind of quinceañera doesn't have a dance? What kind of daughter would refuse this tradition?